When I was a boy, I received a gift of a boomerang. I don't remember who gave this to me. I don't know why I received it, but I was fascinated by it. I spent hours and hours playing with this in the side yard. I probably spent more time climbing the fence and getting it out of the neighbor's field than I did actually flying it, but I was still fascinated with it. When you look at it, it's very simple, isn't it? It's simply a curved piece of wood that is shaped in such a way that when it's thrown properly, it makes a long looping arc out and it will more or less come back to you. Now, there's a lot of reasons why in terms of physics. A boomerang is simply two wings joined together at a slight angle. So if you look at a boomerang, one side has got a very curved edge, one side's got pointed, and they're opposite. So as you throw them, the leading edge is always acting as a wing. As such, then, you have Bernoulli's principle of lift applied. And as it moves, then, it's affected by gravity, it's affected by the force of the throw, the force of whatever speed you give it, and also wind and other things. And so that also then impacts how it arcs and whether it returns to you closely or not. You can think of a boomerang as having a lot of the same principles of a gyroscope if you've ever played with one of those. And it may look easy to throw, but it's not, if you've never thrown one. And there's a simple joke that underscores the frustration of a poorly thrown boomerang, and that is, what do you call a boomerang that doesn't come back? A stick. Having said that, there's some great spiritual principles that tie in with the properties of a boomerang. A properly made boomerang, along with a proper throw, will result in the boomerang coming back to the thrower. And the Bible talks about this in the principle of terms of sowing and reaping. Sowing and reaping, and that's what we're going to cover today, this analogy of a boomerang to illustrate this principle and how Christians should practice this aspect of God's Holy Spirit. Let's begin in Scripture in Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, Paul talks about this as he was wrapping up his letter to the congregation at Galatia. Galatians 6, verse 7, he says, "Do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap." Some of us are familiar with gardening, at least on that scale, if not farming. You have to put the effort in to get the effort out. Verse 8 then, "For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption." So if we do one thing, we shouldn't be surprised when that bears consequences, good or bad. "He who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart." Verse 10, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. Let us reap these things," Paul is saying. We gain a godly perspective in acting and then waiting for the benefit, just as physical sowing and reaping are separated by time. The farmer doesn't put the seed in the ground and the next week expect to do a harvest. It takes time, doesn't it? For the plant to grow, for the seed or whatever it is to mature, for then it'd be ready to be harvested. Spiritually, it's not any different. Our spiritual lives depend, though, on how successful we throw our spiritual boomerang of sowing and reaping. What are we putting into it? And it is the proper thing. There is the old adage, how do you get good at something? And they say, practice, practice, practice. And that's true to a point, but you have to actually do perfect practice, don't you? Because you end up practicing poorly or wrong, and then that becomes the habit of doing something, which doesn't help, does it? Much like it takes a physical skill to throw a physical boomerang well, it also takes spiritual skill to properly apply the principle of sowing and reaping. I don't often recommend movies, but one of the ones I really love, and I don't know how many times I've watched it, is a movie titled Secondhand Lions. It's a really nice movie. I won't explain the whole premise of it, but in one particular part, there is this principle of reaping what we sow. In short, there were two uncles. There's a whole backstory behind that, but they had inherited for a time their nephew. The mother couldn't take care of him and sort of dumped them off on him. They grudgingly took care of him, and he tried to fit in with them. Now, these guys had been rumored in the area to be filthy rich, even though they didn't look like it. And so every salesman worth his salt would try to make a call to the farm. And usually they got driven off. But in one particular scene, a seed salesman shows up. And they decided they were going to try their hand at gentleman farming. They wanted a garden. And so they buy a whole slew of packets of seeds. And they plant them, and they're hoeing, and they're weeding, and they're watering. And one day, all three of them are out there in their bib overalls, and they're taking care of the garden. And the boy suddenly stops and looks down the rows, and then looks at his uncles and said, "I thought we were raising beans and beets and carrots and lettuce and corn. Why do they all look the same?" Come to find out, they had planted nothing but corn, even though it had been packaged as carrots and beans and beets and lettuce. Didn't matter what they thought they were planting. What they planted is what they ended up reaping. Let's go to Isaiah 55 next. God plants in us. He's planting in his people to reap a harvest. We speak of those things even in holy days such as Pentecost, where we talk about the first harvest. We recognize that even in the fall holy days with the Feast of Tabernacles and the fall harvest, and we look at how God is working with mankind, but he is reaping with his Spirit. He is expecting a return, and we find this in Isaiah 55 in verse 11. Isaiah, recording for God, says, "So shall be my word that goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me void." Some translations have empty. It's not going to come back to me with nothing. "But it shall accomplish what I please, and it shall prosper in the thing for which I sent it." And this is very interesting to consider. The Bible in basic English has this verse translated this way. It's a little different. I like some of the wording. "So will my word be which goes out of my mouth. It will not come back to me with nothing done, but it will give effect to my purpose and do that for which I have sent it." And in this regard, God is the ultimate purveyor of the boomerang principle, isn't he? He puts out his Spirit. He puts out his effort. He puts his love into us. He expends energy to reap a return, to reap what he has sown. We see this even how he blesses us. Let's look at Genesis 12 next. I think one of the great difficulties in the Western cultures, especially as we move down to the end time, is that this principle is lost. We don't have a lot of people who plan for a future, who put effort into something that isn't going to return immediately. And so we have expectations that everything is now. In Genesis 12 and verse 1, God here is speaking to Abram. He's not yet Abraham, but he's beginning to work with him. So verse 1, "Now the Eternal said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land I will show you." We don't oftentimes think in terms of these spiritual stories, if you will. We have that we read of those that God worked with, of even them applying this principle of sowing and reaping. But Abraham responded here, didn't he? God says, "I need you to leave this area." What did Abraham sow? He could have sown disrespect, rebellion. He could have had an attitude that said, "Why? I don't want to go." Lot's wife was that way, wasn't she? "I don't care how bad it is. I like it here." Verse 2, God says to Abram, "I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." God sowed in Abraham something that brought a great return, didn't it? We can lose sight of this in history. I even heard recently, unfortunately, somebody within God's church that says there is no evidence of what we teach in the U.S. and Britain and prophecy booklet. No historical evidence. And I thought, well, that's a pretty shallow position to take. Because there is, but you have to dig for it. But even so, looking at the attributes that God said these tribes, these future nations would have, it's undoubtable where they are, who they are. But consider that God was going to bless the world through Abraham. It could have been anyone. Abraham showed certain tendencies, traits, characteristics that God knew he could work with. And look how the world has been blessed. We don't think of this in the modern sense. We look at disparities of how men have treated other men, and we want our pound of flesh. But for instance, England, in spite of being castigated for being a world empire, they took the Bible to the world. And look at what that sowed and what that has reaped. Nations that had no sense of a rule of law. Again, not a condemnation, just an observation. Look at education around the world, modeled on the British model, and how that changed those nations for the better. I mentioned the rule of law. That is, that law applies to everyone equally. Of course, we've strayed from that, haven't we? Money buys justice. I put that in quotes now. But nonetheless, it was spread around the world. Even as England went to places like India and some of those sub-Asian places, they removed caste systems, social strata, horrible practices of those that were burned on the pyres when their husbands died, things of this nature. The USA, to move forward, look at the wars that this nation fought to defend other nations with no thought of gain from it. No other nation in history has done that just because it was the right thing to do. Look at the monetary aid given to other nations. I still remember back in the early 2000s, I don't remember the event that took place, but there was some natural catastrophe someplace in Asia. The United States' response was to send a U.S. naval aircraft carrier. And there were a lot of people that kind of scoffed at that. That we were using the occasion to flex our military might, to show the world how powerful we were, you know, things of this nature. But what was lost is what that aircraft carrier could accomplish. They are floating cities, and they're powered by nuclear generators. They can create fresh water, thousands of gallons an hour. They have medical staff. They have airplanes that can fly in supplies. They have all kinds of resources. And we did that and never sent a bill, to my knowledge. So when you consider even like Abraham, how he's blessed, the obvious blessing is that through Abraham came the Messiah. And the blessing that's going to bring on all the world. Let's consider this principle of sowing and reaping a little further in Matthew chapter 10. Sometimes we can become so accustomed to the world as it is that we forget, we can miss seeing the things that are commonly done that cause problems. We're just used to it. And so the world around us is based on competition. It's based on greed. It's based on position. That if I don't get a position, somebody gets something better than me. Things of this nature. Well, that's a satanic view, isn't it? How Satan has framed how everything runs in the world. And instead, we should mirror and model what Christ, what God promotes. In Matthew 10, verse 8, I want to read the last sentence there, the end of it. Freely you have received, freely give. What Christ was teaching here to the disciples was that when you go out, do things without expecting a return, because it's the right thing to do. Give as I have given to you. And look at what God has given. It's unfortunate people dismiss God so much, but the very life that we have, the air that we breathe, the food that we have, and the fact that it comes around every year. You know, we have to put certain effort into making those things happen, but it is God who sustains all this. He freely gives. and we get so much more than we give back at times. But we need to remember this principle. Freely you have received, freely given. Many people can tend to think of this boomerang principle in terms of only good things. But we can also sow and reap wrong actions or consequences if we're not careful. We won't turn there, but there's a great example in the book of Judges. I'll just recount it for you. At the beginning of the book, we have the story of the tribe of Judah fighting one of the Canaanite kings. His name was Adoni-Bezek. They had captured him. He had a bad reputation. When they captured him, they cut off his thumbs and his big toes. And it sounds awful when you read the account. Why would Judah ever do that? The interesting thing is that Adoni-Bezek understood exactly why they had done that. Because he cried out, 70 kings with their thumbs and big toes cut off, used to gather scraps under my table, as I have done, God has done to me. What he sowed, he reaped. He had sowed cruelty, and he reaped God's retribution, finally. Let's look at Job chapter 4. In the book of Job, we have an interesting dialogue between Job and initially three of his friends that didn't understand what God was trying to reveal to Job, what lessons he was trying to teach Job. And unfortunately, many people read the book of Job and they understand that Job was wrong and they think the friends was right, but they also forget in that view or that position that even though their friends said, his friends said some things that were right, they were also very wrong in how they judged Job. But in this verse, Job 4, verse 8, they did say here, Eliphaz did say a very valuable point, and that is, even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. This is why wars never solve problems. When you learn to hate and kill, you have sown something. And it doesn't go away overnight. God is very displeased when we sow these kind of things. In fact, Proverbs 6, verses 12 to 15, he talks about things he hates. And one of them is sowing discord among God's people. That we're not able to work out our differences. Let's look a little further in Luke chapter 6. This is misunderstood and misused even, unfortunately, in greater Christian circles. And that is when Christ taught this matter of not judging. What is it we sow? What is it we reap? And considering this lesson that he teaches in Luke 6, verse 37, he says, "Judge not, and you shall not be judged." This is the parallel account to what's in Matthew 7. And unfortunately, as I said, many Christians even say, well, then it's not for me to judge at all. And they miss the point. What Christ is saying here is, essentially, you're going to be judged as you're judged. How you judge, how you sow is what you're going to reap. Adoni-Bezek, as the king, understood that finally. He continues, Christ does here, in saying, "Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned." Doesn't mean there aren't consequences for bad choices, but God is not going to be as hard on us, if I can say it this way, if we're humble, because he can work with us. We haven't sown this resistance to get our back up and to push back and to not yield to him. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. This point is repeated in Scripture several times. To forgive is vital in our Christian calling. Because if we sow hatred, animosity, discord, what are we going to reap? If we sow forgiveness, what are we going to reap? They're not the same things. Verse 38, "Give and it will be given to you." Now, this is the principle of sowing and reaping. Notice what happens when God sees us give. He gives back, but he doesn't just give one for one. He says, give and it will be given to you, notice, a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put into your bosom. Now, we don't often buy what we call dry goods today. Things already come packaged. But I still remember my mom, when she would bake, she would get out the bag of flour and she'd get her cup. It was a cup of flour. She'd scoop out a cup of flour. Well, that's a cup of flour, but is it a real cup of flour? Because then she could take a spoon, she could tap it down, she could set it on the counter and kind of shake it, and it all settled down. It was very interesting to watch. You could just see it settle down. And then she'd take a spoon, she'd put a little bit more in there. This is what Christ is talking about here. When we give to others, God doesn't just give us a scoop. He gives us that scoop pressed down, shaken together, and running over. This is what we reap when we sow this attitude. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. And humanly, it's very easy to forget this, isn't it? We get wound up when we're offended, when we're hurt, when we're mistreated, and we try to give the same thing back. But what do we reap when we sow that? There are a lot of lessons in just these couple of verses. How to judge each other, how not to condemn each other, how to forgive each other, how to give to each other, and how God will bless the right things in these. Let's look at Acts 20. There's a statement, a comment that Paul makes here, quoting Christ. Christ said this in principle, but not in the same way. So commentaries are of a different opinion as to whether it's a direct quote or whether he's paraphrasing here. But nonetheless, Acts 20 and verse 35, Paul says, I've shown you in every way by laboring like this. He is speaking to the congregation at Ephesus. And Paul had been taken to task by some that he was simply a hireling. You know, well, it's an easy job being a pastor. You only work one day a week. Or things of this nature. And so rather than take their ties and create a problem, he supported himself, didn't he? He went back to his old trade of tent making, which seems kind of odd. He's in the middle of the Roman Empire. Why would you make tents? Who would buy those? Well, Ephesus was one such place. There were other cities that would be stopping off points for areas that weren't as civilized. And people would buy things like tents because they needed shelter when they got to these places. And so he's saying, look, I've given you an example by my labors. Look at what I have sown, that you must support the weak and remember the words of Lord Jesus as he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Paul was reminding them to be careful to consider what they were sowing so that they weren't surprised when they received it back. And again, we can see that in a negative way. We can see it in a positive way. And again, sometimes we can be so close to what God is working in our lives that we fail to see what's not there. We raise up our children according to God's word. And it shouldn't be surprising when we see them excel compared to the world. When we invest and do the right things, it doesn't mean that it's going to be the way we are. I've told this before. I don't remember. I have to go back and count up how many jobs I lost over the Sabbath through the holy days. But in every instance, God provided. And what was very interesting, as I looked back over my career and my previous employment field, was that I needed every one of those jobs to end up doing the last job I had, which was the best job I ever had there. What we sow and what we reap are directly connected. We sow good things, as we read earlier, then we're going to reap good things. Does this mean then, Acts 20 verse 35, does this mean then that we are all to become givers? And some will say, well, that's not possible. But I would ask, why not? Can you give in receiving? Yes, you can. There have been times I've been given a gift that really doesn't mean anything to me. But it was something that the giver thought through that they wanted to give me, made the time to buy or make, and they wanted to make sure that they gave it to me in thanking me for whatever it was. I receive it, I give them a blessing, don't I? This is what it says here. It's more blessed to give than to receive. If I give them the opportunity to give it to me, because I suspect everybody here has tried to give a gift maybe at one point at least in their life, and somebody just absolutely refuses it for whatever reason. No, I can't accept that. But they're denying them a blessing, aren't they? Without even realizing it, probably. But the wonderful thing about God's way of life is it's not zero sum. The pie is not just 12 inches across. The pie is infinity, which is curious because pie is infinity. But it never runs out, does it? With God's way of life, you can never outgive God. There's always more to give, which means there's also more to receive. And if we look at all of this from God's perspective of a blessing and giving, then what if we give someone the blessing from our receiving? And then we all become givers, but we also all become receivers, and the blessings flow. It's a wonderful perspective to have, gracious receivers as well as givers, because it reflects God's nature. Look at how much God gives. He gives us His patience, His mercy, His love, at times when humanly we wouldn't do that. Let's go to 1 Peter 3 next. Maybe you've heard the saying, we have other examples, you know, karma, we say karma. It's not karma, it's godly principle. There are some people that say, well, what goes around comes around, which is closely associated to that thought. What they're really talking about, though, is this spiritual principle that we're talking about. It is active in the universe that God has created, whether we understand it or not, whether we call it by different things. It is still there. 1 Peter 3 and verse 9. Do not return evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you are called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. And Peter here has ceased preaching and he's started to meddle now, hasn't he? Because this is really hard to do humanly. When we're offended, as I said earlier, we want our pound of flesh. We want the person to hurt, to pay for what they've done. God says, don't go down that road. Rather, give them a blessing. Not enough just to walk away. We have to give them a blessing as well. That can be in all kinds of ways. At the very least, to pray for them, to ask God to work with them. But it's for us as well. Notice the last part of the verse. Knowing that you were called to this. How much was Christ reviled? He was the Son of God. Is. He knew why He came. And the really sad thing to consider is, He was our Creator. The men that were killing Him, He gave life to. But He didn't return in kind, did He? As He said, I could call out to the Father and He would have sent legions of angels down. But He didn't do that. Instead, He gave a blessing, didn't He? Of His life. He died for all of mankind. You can't give much more of a blessing than that. Hosea 8, verse 7. I'm firmly convinced that so many of the blessings that England and United States received over their history was because they practiced many of these things. Maybe they didn't understand them, and they certainly didn't do it right all the time, did they? We can point out atrocities and times when they were very brutal. That's mankind's history. But as a whole, look at what those nations did. And I'm firmly convinced that's a big part of why the blessings were on those nations. In Hosea 8, verse 7, God is trying to correct Israel here. And He's reminding them, what you sow is what you're going to reap. They thought they could do whatever they wanted and there would be no consequences. And again, that's carnal nature down through mankind's history, isn't it? I'm not hurting anybody. Yes, you are. At the very least, yourself. But sin is never isolated, is it? It ripples out. It affects other lives, whether we intend it to or not, because it is that damaging. Hosea 8 and verse 7, Hosea records God saying here, they sow the wind, they reap the whirlwind. I would add a parenthetical thought here saying, why would they think otherwise? The stalk has no bud, it shall never produce the meal. The first part is what I need to focus on in light of this sermon, what they sow and what they reap. Bad boomerangs will be magnified just as good boomerangs will be. But God watches over his word to perform it, as we read in Isaiah. Our actions and our words can help set in motion God's boomerang principle. Let's look at this in John chapter 6. This is one of those accounts, one of those stories recorded for us I find very interesting, mostly for the things that are not said. If you read between the lines in the account, and we have the account here of Christ feeding the 5,000. Truly a miracle, isn't it? But I like the account as it leads up to it. John 6 and verse 2 will begin. It says, a great multitude followed him because they saw his signs which he performed on those who were diseased. They were intrigued. They were curious. Maybe they wanted to see it for themselves. Maybe they wanted it to happen in their lives. Whatever the reason is, they followed him. But they were following him away from the cities. He was going out of town, not into town. And so Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. It was the time of the Passover, verse 5. Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing the great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, why did he pick out Philip? What was Philip supposed to do here? He says to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? Look at this crowd of people. I'm hungry. They're probably hungry. What are we going to eat, give them to eat? We see in verse 6, Christ didn't really expect an answer. He was curious. He wanted to see how Philip would respond here. So he said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. He already knew in his mind. He wasn't going to leave them hungry. Philip didn't see this initially, so Philip responds, verse 7, he says, we have 200 denarii worth of bread. Between the 13 of us, we've got 5,000 people coming, and that's not even going to make a dent. And so then Andrew speaks up, Simon Peter's brother, says to Christ, there's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish, but what are they among so many? Now, this is where I start finding humor in sort of these things. One is, did Andrew even ask this boy? This boy was the only one who thought ahead to bring lunch. And now somebody wants it. The 5 barley loaves are round, probably about this big, maybe 4 or 5 inches across, a little flat, not big, you know, kind of doughy things we might be used to. It's bread that will travel. And the fish are pickled or salted, so they don't need refrigeration. It's not a huge amount of food. So, but Jesus then, verse 10, tells his disciples, have the people sit down. And so there was a great open area, grassy area. So they sat down, and this is where they find out they numbered about 5,000. So Jesus takes the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise the fish, as much as they wanted. Notice, what's sown, what's reaped. You sow a little bit, you reap a lot. 5,000 people out of 2 fish and 5 loaves. So when they were filled, God is also not wasteful. Notice this. Christ says to his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing is lost. Now, the question I have that's not answered here is, lost to whom? The disciples didn't invest anything. I have to wonder how much was given back to the boy. He's the one that kind of helped facilitate this whole thing. 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And we notice in verse 13, when they had gathered everything up, it filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 loaves that were left over, plus the fish. Christ already knew what he was going to do, remember, verse 6. And so Christ blessed the food, and look at the return on it. Nobody went away hungry. Nobody. It says there at the end of verse 11, as much as they wanted. An all-you-can-eat buffet. But that little boy, whether he was asked or not, still supplied. And that small sacrifice turned into food for 5,000 people. I believe this boy was already practicing Acts 20, verse 35. And I think he was blessed for it. Let's look at a few more verses here. Galatians 5. Galatians 5 and verse 22. Paul says, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. Verse 23, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. There is nothing restricting these attitudes. Do we sow these things daily? And if we don't, are we still expecting to reap them? Let's look at 2 Corinthians, turning back just a little bit. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 6. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6. But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, but he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. I'll give you a little insight into some of my work perspective. My biggest responsibility, I hope, is obvious, and that is what I present on the Sabbath. And I've always tried to take that very seriously. When I was a much younger elder, it would take me a great deal of the week to put together a message. Some of that was inexperience. Some of it was concern, not always in the right way, that I would do and say the right thing, have the right information, all those sort of things. As years progressed and I became a pastor and I had more responsibilities, more tasks, more things that were needed of me in my schedule during the week, there was a time when I would get very frustrated because I knew I didn't have the time to put the messages together that I had become accustomed to. I didn't think I was putting in the right amount of time. And then I had an epiphany that I realized that if I was focused on what God was having me do during the week, and there are things that can interrupt schedules, people that end up in the hospital, or people that need counseling, or just unexpected things in life with the family. The kids needed my time or attention. I needed to help my wife with something, or whatever it happened to be. If I was doing the right thing, then God would always bless the message. And there were times, quite honestly, where I would put a message together, not very often, but there have been a few occasions, in literally a couple of hours. Because it would just flow because God was giving it. Because the other things that I did were more important. And so he took care of the things I couldn't do. And so when we read 2 Corinthians 9, 6, this applies in so many areas of our lives. How do we sow? How do we reap? Let's look at an example of a lady in Acts 9. In Acts 9, we have the example of a lady named Dorcas. She also has another name. They're different languages. She's also known as Tabitha. Acts 9, verse 36, at Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which was translated Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. What did she sow? Good works and charitable deeds. But it happened in those days she became sick and she died. And when they washed her and laid her in the upper room, which was the tradition for preparing the body, it's not just washing like soap and water. Some of that could have been involved, but it was also washing and perfumes and different things in the way they would prepare the body for burial. She was much loved, and so these people were doing these things to honor her. When they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. Since Lydia was near Joppa, the disciples heard that Peter was there. They sent two men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. Then Peter arose and went with them, and when he had come, they brought him, to the upper room, and all the widows stood by him weeping. Notice what they were doing. showing the tunics and the garments which Dorcas had made while she was with him, remembering the good works and the charitable deeds that she had done. What she had sown, literally and figuratively. Verse 40, but then Peter put them all out, knelt down and prayed. Turning to the body, he said, Tabitha, arise. What did she sow? All these good things that God ended up honoring by blessing her, she reaped life again. She opened her eyes. When she saw Peter, she sat up. Quite an example. Proverbs 11:18 talks about sowing righteousness in what we do. Let's conclude at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiastes 12. Solomon lived a very interesting life, and he had quite the advantage, if you will, starting out as king. David had died. There was a lot of political intrigue, even who would be king after David. Solomon was the one that God chose, and that's where things progressed in terms of the subsequent kings of Israel initially and then later Judah. But the thing that he asked for at the beginning of his reign, when God said, ask whatever you want, I'm going to give you a blessing because of your father. He could have asked, as God said, for riches, for power, for all kinds of things. He asked for wisdom. And God blessed that. But it seems that Solomon didn't always follow through on that. I read the book of Ecclesiastes as the lament of an old man looking back on his life, knowing that he missed the mark on some important things. And so he's sharing that. So after trying wine and women and pleasure of all sorts, in chapter 12, verse 13, he says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. What is the point of life? What should I focus on? Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is everything in a man's life. Do we sow this? Do we sow fearing God and keeping his commandments so that we'll reap eternal life? That's delayed gratification, isn't it? It's one of the things psychologists note in terms of what they call EQ, emotional intelligence. Whether someone has the ability, the capacity, the desire to delay gratification now for something better in the future. Not many people have that. They want the shiny thing now because they can't wait. Let's look back a chapter, Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1. It's an interesting translation into the English. It says, cast your bread upon the waters, and you will find it after many days. Have you ever pondered that verse? You're not even supposed to throw bread on the waters for the ducks to eat. It's not good for them. So what does it mean? What it's saying is, take something that you don't think has much value at all, and after many days, it will return to you in a greater way. This is the principle of sowing and reaping, isn't it? What is our spiritual boomerang? What are we putting out there, whether we realize it or not, that is going to bring back things to us? Are we looking at what we are putting out to consider what is coming back to us? Or are our spiritual boomerangs like so many sticks? God has called us in part to show others the blessings of his way of life. He has given us things to show others how to live and bring blessings in their lives. We are to be an example to those who watch us. And I can guarantee you there are people who watch you because you say, this is what I believe, this is what I do, and this is what I'm not going to do. And they watch to see if that's the case. We shouldn't fear that. Rather, we should live up to it, because we are to be an example to those watching so that God's truth is magnified. Even if they don't understand it in this lifetime, in the life to come they will. So let's remember Isaiah 55:11, that God's Spirit will not return to him empty. Let's remember and practice the analogy of the boomerang in sowing and reaping.